Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
This podcast is all about elite distance running in the UK.
We're here to give you all the latest news updates around the sport,
as well as weekly interviews with athletes and coaches.
Stay up to date by following us on Instagram and X at Sunday Podcast.
And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel too, where we post athlete workout videos, shoe reviews and more.
Thanks for listening, and as always, we hope you enjoy the episode.
Right, guys, welcome back. We are almost wrapped up with these Paris reviews, just the women's marathon to go tomorrow morning. But, mate, what a day of athletics we've had today. And obviously, we haven't chatted about last night either.
I'm blown away. It's just crazy, mate. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, the whole Olympic Games has just been off the charts. I mean, I don't think I've watched a race and thought, meh, like... And sometimes you do get that at champs. Sometimes you do get, you know, not last year, but, you know, there's been a few years where the men's 800 has been a little bit, for me, I haven't been too invested and stuff. But, you know, that's just gone up a whole new level. And, I mean, Jesus Christ, that final today. I mean, the women's 15 is scary right now. I just don't know, like all these performances. I just thought the Olympic Games, before we get started, has just been 10 out of 10. I mean, the marathon earlier on as well. We'll get into all of these events separately because they all deserve their own kind of segment, piece, whatever. I'm speechless, man. I just don't know how, there's so many performances. I'm just like, how do we put them into context? Like, it's just, they've just been out of this world.
Yeah, and it's why it's the biggest show on earth, isn't it? And it's why it's so good that it only happens every 4 years. I think, obviously, people, sometimes it's the critique of the sport, you know, in that everything's about something every 4 years. But I think when it does come around, that's why it just adds the magic. It adds the surprises because, honestly, there's been so many events. And like you say, like, it's been great because I don't think we've had that many events where we've had a clear favorite who has gone and dominated. And if that has been the case, we've had people who shouldn't be in the conversation, like no disrespect to them, getting minor medals in those events. So for example, like that 1500, obviously you might have been able to say, oh, Kipyegon is a favorite in that, but then you get Georgia Bell coming third, for example. Over on the men's side, obviously, Jakob is normally a favourite. He gets beat, so does Kerr. So I think with just every race, there's been some sort of surprise, whether it's for a silver or a bronze, or whether it's for the winner.
100%. And I was just kind of thinking today, like, Keely's victory seems like a lifetime ago. She won the 800, and it almost seems like what she did as a British athlete and just purely dominated that women's 800. She came in as heavy favourite. She lived up to the hype. She just absolutely dominated it. But she almost seems overshadowed now. Like today, you know, we've had Max Bergen back at his best, but we've had Georgia Bell and Emil Caress coming close to the medal. And it's like, wow. And obviously that men's 1500 coming the night after. And it's just been, it's been a crazy games. And, you know, you talk about, I think it come around every 4 years, but Paris in particular feels like it's come around like every bloody 7 years because, or 8 years, whatever, because Tokyo did not, I think, for a lot of people, like even when we talk about the races and stuff and how exciting they were, and I don't think there's many races in Tokyo people look back on and go like, that was insane. And I think I'm just talking from my own personal opinion, but I don't have a memory, like the races don't stand out to me in Tokyo, whereas a lot of Olympic Games they do. You know, we can think back to when Farah was in London, and we can think back to you know, Magaluffy in the 1500 in London, and these iconic races, and you can remember them. Rhodesia, like, I'm just gravitating towards London because there was, again, it was a bit like Paris, to be honest, when you do the comparison. There were just so many massive races and massive moments that you remember, and Rio, of course, there was a few of them as well, but I feel like in Tokyo just didn't have too many of them, and I think that's why we almost feel starved of the Olympics, and it feels like it's been a lot longer than 4 years. Obviously it's only been three, but it didn't feel like.
I do think the crowd adds,
that's what I mean, the stadium and the crowd and the atmosphere, it makes a massive difference in the experience. And I think a lot of people have felt connected to Paris because a lot of people that we know in circles and they've gone over there. Do you know what I mean? They've experienced it. And I think there's always going to be a bit of a bias there as well.
Yeah, and I just think like even if the races in Tokyo were kind of top notch, like you say, mate, like in the celebrations, there's just you don't pan to the crowd, you don't kind of see people running over, like Mondo, for example, run over to his missus. You don't get those moments so much.
Yeah, I mean, when they do the medal ceremonies in empty stadiums and victory laps, and I mean, did anyone do a victory lap? I can't even remember. So, yeah, it does feel like we've been starved of a fantastic display of athletics. And it's funny because obviously we've had some great world. I mean, 2022 and 2023, I mean, especially last year, the World Championships was off the scale. But you, after the Olympics has happened this last 10 days, obviously we've got the Women's Marathon to go, but it's like, you're right, mate. Like the Olympics is so much more of a big deal. Like, and I think we've been living on World Championships for quite a while because obviously Tokyo was very meh. But the Olympic Games is a whole nother level. And the crowd, the people who are investing in it, the exposure, like my mates who don't even watch running have been watching every single session and like messages that, you know, I've had messages like, damn, when did we get so good at middle distance running? Like, and that's it. And it's just they would never watch a world championships.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I'll go into work and everyone's like, oh, did you watch that race last night? What did you think? And yeah, obviously these people, yeah, they like running, they like athletics, but they would never be so up to date in terms of kind of athletics, you know. So
Been
I think
amazing.
it's brilliant.
Storytelling's been 10 out of 10, and there's been time for the stories to build. And each day, you know, we've had different people to focus on, and that's what's made it so special. But mate, let's get into the action then. I mean, yeah, let's work backwards. I mean, by the way, 4x4s were just outrageous as well. So I mean, the whole champs have just been it reminds me why I love the sport so much. And I think sometimes you in the off season stuff, you can lose it a little bit and listen to Michael Johnson talk about the storytelling and cramming in loads of action, and the sport's quite confusing to follow in the off years, etc. But like when the Olympics is on, you're just like, yeah, there's no sport like it. It's unrivaled. But anyway, the women's 1500, mate. I mean, Jesus Christ, where do we start?
I think we should start with Georgia Bell, mate. I think we, particularly you, but I think both of us, we said, look, she's got a shot. And as we kind of went through the rounds, I think watching her, we've both been saying that she's looked like she had more and more of a shot. I think definitely Keeley's win must have given her a boost. And her post-race interview as well, talking about how she had no pressure. And I guess with Georgia Bell's age as well, obviously she's new to the kind of professional side of the sport, but she's 30 years old. Even though it's her first season back, she's probably come in thinking, it's my first season back, but I actually don't have much time to kind of get straight to the top, you know, because she's going to be 34 at the next Olympics, and obviously it's not too old, but you're kind of getting towards maybe the 5K, 10K. That's kind of about right. But 1500, 30, she probably come back just for her peak year, in terms of her age. So obviously we hope she kind of can keep herself going. But yeah, it just seemed to be, and as she said in her interview, yeah, kind of everything fell into place. For her this season, and it's just been an absolute crazy, crazy season. I don't think we can almost like understate that enough, you know. But like, yeah, how do you sum it up, mate? Because I just don't think we've ever seen anything like that.
This is what I mean by, you know, it's just so tough to put into context. You know, national record. I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, I feel like the way she crushed Laura Muir at the British champs, and Laura Muir went out and ran 3:53 after that and stuff, you're like, well, what amazes me about Georgia Bell is she can't be shifted. Like, I've never actually seen her get like drops. Like, she wasn't dropped today. Like, she was always hanging on. Like, she's like a leech. You just it. These are world-class women who have been at the game for 10 years, you know, or at such a high level, and they can't get rid of her. She just hung and hung and hung. And this is why I kind of, I said, like, I think she will medal, you know, and put her as an outside shot to medal, because just the way, you know, in the semi, she looked great in the heats, but just also like on the circuit, whenever she's been in a fast race, and that 800, that 156 800, by the way, was an example at the London Diamond League. And look, I think if she did an 800 tomorrow, she could probably run 155. Like, I think she's that good. And as that is something that she has over the likes of Hole and Kipyegon, I think she's faster than them over a flat 800. I think she's the fastest in that race over a flat 800. But her progression, man, 406 last year, 352.6, 14 seconds. Like, I was trying to think of like comparisons. Like, I just don't think you can compare to anything. Like, that is off the charts.
It's top quality, and I think you could almost
There is hope for us, mate. There is hope for us.
yeah.
We're sitting here, bro. There is hope. You know, if she can do that in 12 months, what can we do in 4 years, buddy?
Well, I'd have to start running again, so maybe I'll do duathlons for a couple years, and then I'll come back in 4 years, you know. Yeah, it was just insane run. And I think when you put into context as well how good Kipyegon is, it's not like Georgia Bell has come and got a bronze in a week 1500 field. This is the best the 1500 meters has ever been.
Ever been.
It's
One thing I
the
would
best,
say though,
yeah,
when we
field
get into,
assembled. It's
easily, and but when we get into nitty-gritty of it, when you see that race play out, you know, Segai has done, Georgia Bell owes Segai her bronze medal, obviously not literally, but like Segai, I don't know why, like Saint Pierre and Hiltz and people like that, like really were persistent at getting on the pace early when it was like 59, like it was stupidly quick. But I think they truly believed as well. Like, I think Saint Pierre and people like that and Hiltz truly believed that they were in 353, 352 period. And I think they probably were had they have run Georgia Bell's race. You know, had they gone 60 mid on the first lap instead of 59, had they have just, you know, been able to settle in the pack a little bit and sort of work their way up. And you think about Laura Muir coming through for fifth as well, by the way. That was a massive run for her, 353. And at the start of the race, you're thinking, oh my God, she can't live with this. But you know, it paid off. And I actually think Muir was like virtually flat out, by the way. Like, I'm not sure if that was a conscious decision to hold back. I think that was a, I can't really go with this.
I think it was a conscious decision in the first lap. I
Okay.
think she expected to get back to him quicker
Yeah. Okay. That's a good, yeah. Fair.
after that. I actually think Laura Muir, like, fair play to her. That is an unbelievable, like, tactical race from her. And I don't think she could have done anything more. Because, like you
Yeah,
say, she's come so close to her personal best in a championship, in a third round. So I think she's, like, timed that to perfection. It's just not enough. She's just not as good as she was 3 years ago and 4 years ago. But I still
she's
respect.
better. She's better, mate. She's running faster, but
I think that's just.
I
I don't
just
think.
think Muir is low-key unfortunate that she's been in a generation with the bloody Kipyegon and then like and like Hassan and then of course like the men,
Is
Semenya
Andy
and
Murray? Laura Muir is Andy Murray.
Laura Muir.
Other generations would have been done. Like,
And she would have had the, you know, Olympic golds. She would have done like what Farah did, but unfortunately, and then now you're just looking at it like Jesus Christ. You know, keep going on hold bell and to be fair to Segar, like she's still around 401. She's done the 10, the 5, the 15. Had Segar been just fresh for one of them and sort of given one a crack, like say the 1500, she probably would have featured a bit more. But I don't know why she took it out so hard. That was crazy. But boy, oh boy, was it entertaining for us. So yeah, I mean, Muir astonishing. Bell, I've got no words, mate. Like honestly, like I said, don't know how to break the performance down. I mean, look, she executed the race well, and funny, I watched Josh Kerback, the 2023 Worlds back, and he was in fifth, sixth for a lot of that race, and then came up through. Whereas he was in second for pretty much all the race the other night, you know, a few nights back, and he was on Jakob. And I think Jakob knew Kerr would do that, and that's probably why Jakob took it out so hard, because he was like, this is how I can wear Kerr out, basically, because he's going to go with me. But of course, he didn't envision Hocker. And, you know, Georgia Bell, in a similar instance, was just, you know, again, very smart, relaxed, didn't have the pressure to get right on the heels of Segai and be battling with Hull and people like that. And then just came through, and geez, five more meters.
That is always we always speak about this. It's always the benefit of being able to race for bronze, is that you don't have to pay such close attention.
Yeah, she's not, when Kipyegon goes to the front and kicks on, she's not worrying about covering that move. You know, she's just like, oh yeah, you know, Weltergier and Hull and Muir and people like that were battling, and she's like, they'll come back, you know, and she can battle with them and hold on to them. So yeah, I think you're right about that. But
I also think probably got to shout out Hull as well, because actually, well, we've seen, if anything, from these champs, right, we've seen that being kind of the pest on the circuit does not guarantee you your medals. And so to come, like, I think on paper, she comes in as the favorite for that silver, almost like in a similar way as some people have come in for favorites to gold, just because Kipyegon's so kind of different to everyone else, so much better than everyone else, that actually, yeah, coming in and actually making sure she nailed that silver, like, fair play to her as well, you know.
100%. 100%. So, yeah, the women's 1500, the two Americans in 7th and 8th, 356 and 357. Good running from them. And Susan Ajor as well. She trains in America, 356.0. Like, yeah, that race, I was just taken aback. So, there we are. You're going to hear those words a good bit. Working backwards in men's 5K. I mean, is this the start? I mean, Jakob's won 3 back-to-back world, you know, global goals. He's so dominant, man. They can't get near him. He's cruising around that top bend. Like, he's unbeatable. He's literally unbeatable at the 5K. He's Mo Farah. Like, they can run 12:39 on the circuit, but, like, Gebrewet kicks on, you know, with 600 to go, and it's not fast enough. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was 56.9. Like, that's not fast enough to break Jakob when it's you're talking about a kilometer race, really. Like, it was a 1K race. It's like, no chance. Like, this is the start. I think he should move up to the 5 and 10, to be honest with you.
I think he will, but I think losing the 15 is going to keep him there. I think had he won the 15, he's more, I think that's what makes him more likely to move up. You know?
Do you know what? He's, like we said, he's still 23, mate. He could potentially do the 1500 in LA and be 27, and then he could go to Brisbane after that and be 31 years old.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jakob, like, start running halves, like, when he gets into that stage of his career. Like, I think he's done one before when he was quite young. I think all three of them did as, like, a training run in Norway, you know. But, like, yeah, you've got to think that guy would be absolutely,
I remember that, actually,
ruthless in a half marathon. What I find interesting, though, the fact that Quemoy in second, he's the only other one who is a 1500 meter runner. Like, back in 2014, the guy ran 3:28. And it just shows you, mate, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's being able to kick. And I think it's so weird, but and people used to say about Farah as well, why don't they just run quick? But no one is willing to sacrifice their chances of a bronze medal to try and beat the guy out of gold. And I think that's why we'll never see these absolutely crazy 5, 10K, like, times, really, is because they're not willing, well, especially the 5, they're not willing to work together. Because I think that's the only way you beat Jakob, like you say, is if you go run 12:35 in the Olympics. But who's willing to put in that work and sacrifice their own potential bronze or whatever it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is a problem. And yeah, it'll just continue to be a problem. I mean, the Ethiopians, to be fair to them, like, their change of pace is just phenomenal. Like, they are electric when they change gear, but they can't make it. Like, if it was jog fest to 100 to go, I honestly think they'd win. Like, I've got no question.
Yeah,
like,
do you know, like,
they just nip out everywhere. Just go,
yeah.
Like, But then I don't know if it's relative. You know, I don't know if it's more when we see Gebrewet change gears, he goes from running 64s to 57, and we're like, oh my God, like, obviously that looks like a massive change of pace.
Mm.
So, yeah, maybe they're not that good at changing pace, but it's just a changing pace off of like a very, very slow pace. I don't know. So, but yeah, I mean, the men's five, I mean, yeah, he's king of the five. And like you said, I just can't see him be getting beat. And you're probably right. I think the fact that he is doing the 1500 and he is still training for the 1500 is keeping him dominant over the 5000. If he legit moved to the 5000, would he have the same wheelhouse? Would he work the speed, the, you know, that top end the same and stuff? And would he get a little bit carried away with maybe chasing a faster time over the 5k? Probably. And that may cost him then, you know, someone else may come along with a faster finish than him. So I think it's just interesting. And I think it's great that he's done three doubles back to back and they've all pretty much played out in the same way. But I was just surprised how easy he had it, to be honest with you. Fisher, exhausted from the 10, gets a bronze medal as well. That was another huge run from him. Yeah. He has had an absolutely epic champs. And that move back to his high school coach, saw an interview with him. You know, he basically just wanted, what Jerry did was great, but he just needed a little bit more individualization, a little bit more specificity. And he's nailed it, man.
Yeah.
And he lives at altitude full time now. So
yeah. I also think those years with Jerry, though, they allow you to do that.
Yeah, you're probably
like
right.
He's had, how many years with Jerry did he have? Four, maybe, after Stanford?
Yeah.
You've got 4 years of running, from what we know about BTC, obviously BTC in their peak as well. Four years of running with basically most of the best guys in the world over that sort of distance.
Yeah.
And serious kind of threshold work. Constantly at high mileage. Like I think doing that and then kind of spending some time, doing some specific work, even if it's kind of more solo, and getting yourself ready to race. It's the key, isn't it? So what a performance from him. And obviously, mate, we're guilty of this. We always refer to him as like the nearly man. This champs is well and truly paid off for him.
He's delivered, yeah. Yeah, he's delivered, man. And at last K, 221, that's the fastest last K we've seen at a champs for a long, long time. I think that was very, very impressive. And yeah, I think if anyone's walking away from this Olympic Games and like, look, if you're ever going to get on the podium, you just need to finish fast. And like, I think that's period, like even further down the pyramid as well, because I think there's a real tendency, like people don't worry about their kick until they've made it to the top. Whereas I almost feel like you're never going to make it to the top if that's the kind of way you approach the sport. And you look at the people who have made it to the top, like Josh Kerr, renowned for his kick, even through the age groups, even through the NCAAs, renowned for winning races, renowned for finishing fast. You know, Grant Fisher, same thing. Ingebrigtsen is probably the only guy who has never been renowned for his kick, but everyone else has. And I do think Ingebrigtsen is in a
bit. You say that. I think Ingebrigtsen, as a junior, you'd say he could kick. Do you know what I mean? He was able to kick relative to his age groups. It's just at the top level, you know, that we're saying he doesn't have a kick.
I still think
he has a kick against, like,
I mean, he does have a kick over 5,000. Actually, he has the best kick that anyone's ever seen. So, yeah, and I think that's what I'm trying to say. It's just like, I think if you're an athlete now, and like Cole Hocker, prime example, like Cole Hocker's kick has been phenomenal, like his whole life. But then, you know, he's just got that extra bit, and it's probably easier to work on that extra bit than work on your kick. You know, like that thing just can't be trained. And at the highest level, you know, everyone's got a half decent kick, but what's gonna get you on the podium? What's gonna get you through the rounds? You need a sprint finish. And look, you know, the one British athlete in this race, George Mills, like he's had a rough Olympics in the sense that he's done five races. And do you think that's gonna pay off for him in the long run? Like, would he have just? I think he's probably learned a heap. Like, I do think towing the line five times at Olympic Games. Wait, Yeah, five times. Yeah, I was going to count the repechage, but he didn't make the final, did he? So, I mean, that's got to count for something, hasn't it?
Hey, just the mental fatigue of all of that, and also just the highs and the lows, I think, of going, getting knocked down the heat, having to come back from the repechage, getting through that and being like, okay, I've got another shot. Getting knocked down in the 5K heat, then getting put through, is that mental toll is huge. I'll be really interested to see if he is interested in doubling again, or whether he's like, actually, I'm just gonna go for the five. I think we talk about, I think if we talk about like him and Westy, right? Probably the ones where you're like, okay, if they can get themselves in like really good kind of 5K specific fitness, their kicks will stand them in good stead in races like we saw today.
I honestly, I feel like Westy, like if he keeps progressing the way he's progressing, I do think he'll be in LA. Like, I think he'll make a world championships in the next 2 years as well. What's
As
his
soon
name?
as he does, he'll be the one that we're going, yeah, he's got a shot at the final. That's the thing.
I honestly thought the way those heats are run, I thought he had a bit of a shot at the final anyway. I just saw the bloke run a 3:35 tonight, look very good at a Berry Grand Prix. Cooper Tier, by the way, also looked phenomenal. 3:33 on British soil, completely framped around the Grand Prix. Probably equates to a 3:30, to be honest, in the Diamond League, maybe even quicker. So, the fact that he was left home as an American just shows you how strong their team is. But yeah, I think Mills probably will maybe just respect the challenge a little bit and go, well, actually, if I really want to perform, I probably have to just focus on one.
Yeah, I
So
think so. And it's interesting. It's similar to, I remember Whiteman speaking in an interview once about how he always wanted to do the 8:15 double, and his dad wouldn't let him until he'd won one. And he was like, "Look, you need to win one, and then you can start thinking about doubling, you know."
yeah, because if you don't one like if you don't know what it takes to make a final, like how can you actually talk about like doubling? Because why are you doubling then? Just to bump out in the rounds. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the point? Like, the aim is to get as high, as close to the top as possible. So yeah, I feel like that'll be his next challenge, right? But all things considered, I think fair play to him. He really had to ride a wave this Olympic Games. And do kind of respect him for that. So, but that pretty much crowns out all the, I guess, all the drama and it, the drama and stuff in the 5K and the race itself. I mean, did anyone underperform? I mean, not really. All the guys who got put through by default or whatever got bumped into the final. None of them. Did Lobato actually fall? I think Lobato might have fell, might he? And the geez, I can't remember. There's been so much.
You, mate. Couldn't tell
Huh?
you. I couldn't tell you about looking, mate.
I feel like he got bumped in, but yeah, I'm trying to just have a
I
look.
mean,
Yeah,
you hear it. Yeah.
he got bumped in. Yeah, I'm just looking now. Yeah, I thought he did. So yeah, I was gonna say like all those guys who got bumped in did struggle, except Lombardi. That was my point there. Fourth for him. So, hey, men's 5,000. Then what a race! And Jakob is just the king of the 5,000 right now. 3 years on the trot. That's seriously impressive.
It is, and I think it's the one that, yeah, we all know that he dominates. I'd have loved to see him against Cheptegei after his performance the other night, but I guess we'll have to wait for another chance to see that matchup, you know.
Also, just showed you how good Farah was. Farah at 11, 12, 13, 15, 16.
When
Jeez.
it comes to championship racing, Farah's the GOAT.
It's actually scary. Talking of Farah, mate. Oh, we're going to talk through this 800 quick, but talking of Farah, I actually saw him on the course, like sprinting alongside. He was wearing like a little blue Nike outfit. I thought it was him when the race was going on, the marathon. And I was like, that's definitely Farah, like sprinting alongside them, cheering him on. And at the end of the race, I see him congratulate Bashir, and he was wearing exactly the same kit and or clothes, whatever. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely Farris. So jokes, man. He's just like, he's just a big kid, isn't he? You just gotta love him. So yeah, we'll talk about the men's marathon because that was just unbelievable as well. But men's 800 then, I was just seeing whether it could qualify, whether it topped Paris, basically. And I think it has done because four men sub 142, and that has never ever happened.
Yeah, you see this kind of final, and it just gives you shades of 2012. Obviously, not quite. But did we at the start of this season, if you'd said, yeah, it's going to take 141, 19 to win the Olympics, you'd have been like, yeah, you're having a laugh. We have not seen 800 running like it in 10 years, particularly not in a championship. And the 800 meter title has stayed in Kenya. We talked about it before the champs. We were like, yeah, it's been what, since Beijing, mate, in 08?
Yeah, best event. They've actually, you know, Barkip Yegon, I guess Chebet on the women's side, but let's just talk men's side, actually. Like, 1500 don't seem to be up to much anymore. 5K don't seem to be up to much. 10K, meh. Do you know what I mean? It's their best event, man.
I guess that's legacy, though, isn't it? From having countless champions, particularly Rudisha, of course. But that's just legacy. And I think it's in the same way people grow up in this country wanting to be 1500 meter runners. And that stems back to Ko, Ovet, Kram. And obviously, you've got the guys now, Whiteman, Kerr, inspiring people and others. I think, yeah, it's that inspiration, right? And yeah, Wanyonyi, unbelievable run. His teammate Kinyamau, not even in the final. But he
I tell you what though, Wanyonyi, what to front run that with pressure as well. Like when Rudisha did it, he wasn't under pressure. Obviously Rudisha ran quicker, but like by 0.2 a second or whatever, but Wanyonyi was under pressure. Like he was being hassled, like he was being gunned down that last 100, and he's still like gunned to tape 141.19. And AROP as well, by the way, like I've got to give credit to him because I was a little concerned about him coming into these champs, but actually he has peaked at the right time. And mate, you can't do more than lose the Olympic title by hundredths of a second. 141.20 area record. That is bonkers. Sajati, you know, 141, just outside his PB, and Hopple as well. I mean, I said Hopple for gold, long shot. If you said the goal, there was going to be, you said to me, Hopple would come fourth in 141.6, I'd be like, what the hell?
Well, that's it. If you were like, oh yeah, Hopple runs a US record, right? Does he win? You'd be like, yeah. So, but he's done that, come fourth. So,
do you know what's interesting? I mean, Wanyonyi, you know, Hopple's changed coaches, doing a little bit more volume now. Wanyonyi does volume. Like, A-Rock definitely doesn't. Since snippets of him on YouTube, he is just raw speed. But Sajati, with his last 100, like, you got to think, like, they're maybe 8 runners are starting to do a little bit more volume than we give credit for. But maybe that's unfair because you've got people like Max Bergen in 2 hour, and you're just like, these guys just hammer. But then Atui of Spain, like, he's definitely more volume based, you know, he's in the OAC Europe group, and I think they're just getting better. I remember the podcast with Steve Crown that we spoke to, you know, he's like, actually running 25 points is not that difficult, but doing 4 of them back to back is. So like, you need to be really, really strong to do an 800. You need to be able to sustain that speed. And I think maybe, you know, this year proving that, I mean, we don't know, I'm just guessing, but maybe people are, you know, just attacking a little bit more volume when it comes to 800. I know, like, we had Stoney on, he talked about Ben Patterson, and, you know, he's a 142 man, and how strong his 5K is and stuff. So there you go. It's my thoughts on the 800 and why it's so quick. I think maybe they've just, yes, they're still keeping the intensity, but I think they are. I think they must be doing a little bit more volume. I mean, so George mentioned Kinyamau doing close to 30K long runs, like, as an 800 runner. What?
I do think it's just I think it's the event where the training is the most
so hard to get specific. Right. specific, but I think the training is the most individual, depending on what tools you have.
That's what I mean, yeah. Whereas, like, and I think it doesn't lend itself to like other events, right? Like, we talk about Jakob and we're like, he's training for the 1500. That's what makes him so good at the five, because you have to be doing all of it. I bet these, like, say you put the eight guys and the 15 guys, and you're like, we take their best kind of, we take the best results out of them doubling. I don't think any of the eight guys come out near the top. If we like worked out, I guess, like world ranking points, right, for a performance. And
You
you
know
have
what's
to,
going to be cool
you have to rate an eight
is,
and a 15. Like, by doing any eight guys come out on top? Well, I think the 15 guys do, because they're the training they do allows them to run quick over the eight because they're doing it for the 15. But I think the eight training, like, yeah, maybe their 15 is not as good, but it's just so specific
Oh yeah, and let's be
to the
real, you know,
800.
let's be
Like,
real. When these eight guys are just a fraction off their form, they run 144.
yeah.
Like they, you know, the 800 is one of those races where, like, if you're on, you can just, it's a freak performance. And like, do we think these guys are gonna break their times? Like, do we think when Yonyi, Eyüp, Sijaati, and Hopple, like, are gonna go quicker? Like, four men to improve on their already 141 times? That's probably very unrealistic. Like, they may have just run their best, a bit like everyone in that 2012 race ran their PB that day. Because I just don't know how you ever replicate a race like that. The Olympic final, stadium's packed, the atmosphere is absolutely bonkers. And you all come in the best shape you've ever been in, you know, the absolute pinnacle of your career. So be interested to see what happens to Bergen over the next few years, whether he can build off that. I thought that was a massive breakthrough for him. And
Hey, I agree. Yeah. Just like, just get in the final. Like, we've seen it so many times. We've had so many good 800 runners in this country who've not made major championships finals.
honestly, I think he was unlucky that the race was so fast. If that was a 144 race, I think he could have featured a lot higher up.
Yeah.
But because it was so quick, I think then, yeah, you know, we talk about these guys potentially doing a lot more volume and stuff. Like, he definitely hasn't been able to do that because of his injuries. So it's cost him a little bit. But yeah, 143, and in the semi as well. Big performances from him. But yeah, the men's 800. Definitely the event on fire at the moment, and I'm sure it will go in waves. But like, surely we're not going to see. You reckon we're going to see a world record soon? Next year?
Well, that's it. You talk about
This
them
year?
improving. If they do improve, we're gonna have to see a world record, you
Also,
know.
I mean, are we going to see a world record? Because I guess they would argue fresh legged in a pace race, they'll run a world record. But it doesn't always work like that, man.
Yeah, I do think with the eights, like, in terms of the rounds, right? Unless you kind of,
Good for you. They're good for you. Sharpen the senses, get the legs
yeah,
moving,
that's what I mean. Like,
flat
I
the cobwebs.
don't think it's quite the same in terms of like
But I feel
fatigue.
like if you could replicate what they've done on the circuit, the problem is on the circuit, you have to travel. So you always go into, if you do a race on a Wednesday and then another one on a Saturday, you go in a bit leggy. You've traveled to the one on a Wednesday, the day before you. Too many factors to get right. When you're in the same place, if you could replicate that on the circuit, I reckon, like, as well with the semi-finals, like, everyone looks really good in the semi-finals, you know,
But that's it.
sometimes.
Like, say the semi, like, say it was just a heat, then a final, and then we just stuck a pacemaker in the final. I mean, that's how you get their best race. Just one pacemaker, you like. Yeah, but
Yeah, pacemaker to 600 in the finals. Here we are, boys. Yeah, you're probably right, man. So yeah, mate, that was the men's 800. Was very, and I think as well, like, it's worth noting how even that race was, by the way. Like, 141.1, it went through 50.3 at the bell. Like, that's so even. It's pretty much bang on, you know? And we've always said that's the fastest way to do an eight, but I think it's hard when no one, like, you need someone to drive that third 200.
that's it. It's not just the 400 split. It's how you run the first lap as well, though.
Yeah.
Like, you got to look at the 100 splits, because like the 800, you run the first two sometimes, like, particularly the NCAA, right? They run 50, 51 quite a lot, but the first two, they run like 23, 24, and it's just,
You just fucked the whole race.
Yeah, you're way out of the back door.
So,
yeah. Hey, let's move on to the marathon, shall we? Because that was just very special.
Yeah, we got to start with a meal, don't we? And I saw, apologies, can't remember who it was. Someone commented on the Instagram post earlier, and they were like, "Yeah, that's got to be the best pound for pound British performance of the Olympics." And I guess until Georgia Bell's result, you'd probably agree with that, wouldn't you? Maybe even with Georgia Bell's result.
Look, the guy's ahead of a mil. Benson Kipruto has run 202. Bashir Abdi's European record holder, 203.36. Tamrat Tola's a 203 man as well, and he's won several major marathons.
Just a big championship performer, Tola, isn't he?
And he's a big championship performer. And Emil was 20 seconds, 29 seconds off the bronze medal. And like, all I'm saying is the guys in front of him were 203 men, 203, 202 men. And what can Emil run? I mean, Jesus Christ, mate. Like, I think 204 is probably underestimating him. That performance today was just, oh my God. When he was just crowning out the top of that hill, 29K, 30K, he was looking interesting as well. Him and Tola were very similar physiques. They were, you know, they're both quite tall, obviously super skinny. But I just wondered, like, they just seemed to, both of them just seemed to handle the hills really, really well. And on the first one, it was like the first time we really saw Emil, the one between, was it 15 and 20K? And like, he just started to come up on the outside as if to say, like, he just feeling really good on the hills. And whether they both just really trained for them, or whether like there was something to do with like their stride length and the way they were just able to just breeze up it, but they coped with it way, way more. But what Emil didn't cope with, obviously, was the downhill. And it was a bit of a shame that downhill was so steep, because he just, like I said, he did so much damage on that up, but it just came back to him a little quick, and then he rallied. But yeah, back to pound for pound performance, mate. I just thought, yeah, it's probably fair. And I do think Georgia Bell was like in the era of 1500 running, we're in that is just nuts. To be honest with you,
yeah, those two. Obviously, we have a bit of recency bias, but yeah, they do stand out, don't they? And I think that the question you ask about how quick Emil can run, I think the great thing about his performance today is that doesn't actually matter. I think it's what he's prepared for is he's prepared to finish as high up as possible today on that course in those conditions. And that is what has paid off for Emil Caress. And you obviously went out to Italy, spoke to Canova, spoke to him, watched some training. And they were very meticulously preparing for the challenges that this race was going to throw. They weren't going out there and purely trying to get Emil in his best ever marathon shape in terms of pace.
Agreed. I also think everyone else was training meticulously as well. For it, you know, everyone else was and doing, you know, all the heat stuff and all the hill work and everything like that. I just think Emil is the real deal. And I look at him, I'm like, what's next for him? I think marathon majors. I think he needs to, he's already got bronze in London. Third place there, I'm looking like, you know, is it worth him just branching out a little bit? Is it worth him going to Boston, going to New York, going to Chicago, you know, maybe these other ones and trying to pick, I mean, Boston, just that sticks out just because of the hills. But then again, it's more downhill, isn't it? He didn't do too well on the downhill. So maybe not, but like, yeah, maybe going to a slightly tougher marathon major.
New York.
Yeah. One like that where, you know, he can really put himself in the history books, obviously massive paydays and stuff. And one thing I would say, mate, is that was the best marathon I've ever watched. It was so much better than any pace marathon I've ever watched. I think pace marathons, they're great, and then people drop off. I mean, I remember being, I think my excitement was a very similar level to when Kipchoge broke 2 hours in Vienna.
I think that's
that day I was absolutely buzzing that day, and like I was glued to it. You know, you're looking at every split. Commentators were doing a phenomenal job, you know, talking about it. You got amazing world-class paces coming in and out. And that was real high-class entertainment. But that today was on par.
The problem with the pace races is they're only exciting when you're seeing them run a world record.
Yeah, as soon as they slip off world record, you're like, ah,
yeah,
no, oh, they're all blowing up. Ah, you so, know, you're dead right.
We get spoiled. We get spoiled by that in a way, so that now we're like, I don't know, back 10 years ago, like you're running 204, you're like, ah, oh, you're getting super gassed by the splits, and now you're running 204, you're like, yeah, what's even the point? Don't even matter.
It's yeah, true. Unless people are, unless people are going for standards, and
that's like, it, you know, that's it, and then day, and then yeah, you watch today and you're like, it's just ruthless. Every single place, it's reminiscent of cross country, which obviously we love. Like in a way, you know, like the times are irrelevant. It's just about battling out there to try and finish as high up as you can.
Yeah. Here's the question. Yeah, I mean, I exactly thought it was that, and it was unpredictable, and people were doing well on different sections of the course, and I think that was what was exciting. You know, the hill came, Emil was flying. Oh my God, the guy's going to get a medal. Downhill comes. Oh boy, like, he's doing so well to hang on. And then obviously they focus on Tola and the leaders, and then bloody come around the bend and Mills in fourth. He's like, what? But yeah, it was just fantastic. Tola, by the way, phenomenal. But here's a question. I wonder if Emil, will he do the World Championships next year? Like, will he look at that and go, ah, can I? Because I guess that would be history if he won the World Champs in the marathon. It'll be so interesting to see his next move. We won't know for a little while, I'm sure. He'll have to digest that Canova's scheme of plan.
I think
Canova's already got the plan, actually. Yeah. What am I saying? Canova's got that 5-year plan locked.
Yeah, of course he has. I think, and I don't know if it's a, I don't know if it's a British thing, that I do feel like we'll see Emil target the championships. I think when there's a World Champs marathon, when there's an Olympic marathon, I think we will see him want to represent Great Britain and compete in those.
The only thing I would say is,
rather than the majors,
I think you've got to be, I mean, British Athletics being British Athletics, would, I mean, he'd qualify for Tokyo for his world ranking, no doubts about that. But would British Athletics allow him to? Would they make him go run the bloody 206.30? Like, so then he'd have to like churn out another performance in London or somewhere, and then prepare for Tokyo. Like, does he want to do that? But also, I think the only thing I compare it to is like Callum Hawkins, and like Callum Hawkins is phenomenal. Yeah, he got a few world champs, fourth places.
Mm.
But is there a part of Callum Hawkins which maybe wishes he did? Because in marathon running, like, I do feel like the Olympics is massive, and then it's the majors. And then the worlds are behind a major, you know. And I wonder if a part of Hawkins does wish maybe he did a few more majors and stuff, but maybe not.
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, even the Olympics, mate, I think it's behind.
No. Olympics is bigger.
Perhaps.
I think it's bigger. It's bigger than London Marathon. The problem is London Marathon, like, over the last 10 years, like, it's so many different winners. You know, like, it's not, you go down in the history books, but the Olympics is, it's bigger, mate. It's just bigger, okay? I think.
Yeah, mate, I think it's close. I think, had I don't know, mate. I think if a Brit won the London Marathon, right, I think it would be huge.
Not as big as if a Brit won the Olympic Games. Brit won the Olympic Games and marathon, I think it's bigger, way bigger.
I think it's big. It's bigger for athletics fans in the Olympics. I think it's bigger for the nation in the London Marathon. I don't know why. I just feel like because of the mass race appeal, and like the way the British public talk about the London Marathon, I think it does give it that a bit of edge, you know.
I disagree. Be interested to hear what the viewers say, but yeah, I mean, goodness, what other stories came out of that marathon, man? It does
feel, I mean, like, even just Tola's, like, right, the guy was a reserve and he came in
into
the team, what,
good, good place to start.
Came into the team six weeks ago, and I think we said on the preview, like, the guy is a proven championship racer when it comes to world champs and Olympic marathons. Like,
one thing I do want to say as well is Bashir Abdi, phenomenal, and Gary Loft. He's got to be probably, like, you know, we talk about Canova, obviously, and Mills working with him, but Gary Loft is, as far as marathons come, the success he's had is outrageous. I would say he's one of, he is probably pretty much the best marathon coach out there. Like, what he can get Bashir to do. I mean, Bashir was injured in January. Bashir had a sacral stress fracture in January. Comes out 206.47. He's European record holder. He gets silver. Like, turns up on the day. He got bronze last year. And obviously, Nagai gets silver. Sorry, last year, last Olympics. And I got to give it to him, man. He is phenomenal. Getting these guys in shape, whipping them into shape.
Yeah. I think it's impressive, because sometimes you see coaches in his position, obviously with
super talents.
No, I was gonna say, like, you see, like, coaches a bit like when you get, like, your father and son coaches, like Jeff Wyman, Jake Wyman, for example.
Yeah.
You see him have the great coaching career, great kind of coaching accolades, but it's with that one athlete who they are,
yeah,
like, obviously super invested with, super close to. And but you don't often see them then carry that on to other people outside of that athlete. Obviously, like Gert, for example, with Jakob. I know obviously he's coaching Nordas and stuff now, but I think, like, you think about these kind of, like, Sebco's, Peter Coe, for example, with Sebco, like, it's very, very different to then take that to someone else, because it's a completely different approach. And the way he's been able to kind of double back and get another medal today for Bashir, it's brilliant.
Yeah, you're dead right. And, you know, on Gert as well, I do wonder, Gert was still coaching Jakob, would he be a 1500 meter world or Olympic champion? Well, he's already Olympic champ, isn't he? But would he have done better over the 1500 the last couple of years? And I think he would have. I do question Jakob's tactics when it comes to 1500 sometimes, but I'm sure so does everyone. But there we go. There you have it. Conor Mance, Clayton Young. Good performances from those two. They've had a great story on more Clayton Young on YouTube. That has been good. They both ran 2.8. Akasaki, by the way, Japanese guy, 207.32. Imagine your PB coming on that course. I mean, for a minute, I thought a mil. I think it was about maybe 4K to go, maybe 5K to go. I thought a mil was on for a PB. I was looking at splits. I was like, he's only got a string of a few 305s or 302s together, I think. So, which is obviously is quite hard. But I was like, if he runs like his next 4K in just over 12 minutes, he's going to run a PB. I was staggered. But yeah, I think that last bit, they all suffered big time, like Galetta and Akasaki. Like, Emil managed to swamp them up and go by them. So last thing you want is a sprint finish, but in a marathon, but Emil pulled it off. So
yeah, we have.
Hey, what about Sesman and Mohammed as well?
Yeah, obviously, I don't think no disrespect to the guys. I don't mean we expected them to feature, but I just think it's great that we've kind of managed to send a strong marathon team to an Olympics. And I'm sure we'll see the same with the women tomorrow. In terms of, I just think in previous years, we've seen quite a few, like, people pop big time when it comes to championship marathons. So I think, yeah. Solid performances from them, obviously, particularly Sesman. Like, 46th is nothing to be kind of...
No, man. And
2.13, yeah.
Yeah, 2.13 or 2.08 on that course. I mean, not horrendous. And Kipchoge, of course, clapping the last runner through. I think Kipchoge should have finished it. I really do. He should have finished it. He would have had a crazy standing ovation. I almost think it would have been... you know, quite jokes, quite fitting, like, if he did come across the line, even if he was in last place and, like, crowd just going wild and stuff, you know, he should have got to the line for me, but he steps off anyway, fair play. But, and this is why Bekele, for me, will go down as the GOAT, because, you know, he got it done out there. He finished and, you know, 39th, 2:12.24, respectable.
This was the NCAB on the podium, mate. So
he's an all global mate.
All Olympian.
He's an all Olympian, mate.
Yeah, it wasn't we got a bit excited the other day, didn't we? We thought it was gonna be the showdown between the two kings.
Hey, Canova told me. I asked Canova, I said, who's got the best chance? He said Bikini.
He wanted to take the pressure off Emil, you know.
Yeah. So I took his word for it. I didn't have a clue. Who knows how Bikini trains? We never know, right? But yeah, I think as an era of marathon running, though, I guess Kipchoge was adamant he's not going to another marathon. He said he'll be there in maybe a different capacity. Can he inspire? Can he motivate others? And I think this is the end, mate. I think 2024. I mean, Bikili announced he was going to retire last year. Signed some new deal with a Chinese brand, Zantara or something. And then, Kipchoge's just still going strong, but he has consistently had his worst performances back to back.
I think so. I think it's about time Kipchoge stopped. Just went and enjoyed his winnings, you know. Because we hear the stories about him. Kind of, he's still living in that athlete house.
Tough.
Still grinding. Just loves it though, doesn't he? He absolutely loves it. Which is obviously
in the routine. Yeah.
I almost think because he's still been racing in recent years. We've started like it's taken the shine off his performances, but I think look, once he's retired for like 6 months a year and we don't see him on the start lines, everyone's going to be like, yeah, we'll go back to kind of the like looking at him as obviously the greatest of all time. Not that we don't, but do you know what I mean? I think it's just he seemed so human in the past couple of years that we've almost forgot. But as soon as he retires,
yeah, and it does happen, you know, and Bikili as well. You almost, because they're still running, you forget what they've done because you measure them on their recent performances. Yeah. You know, you measure Bikili and Kipchoge on their marathon performances that they've done, and they've, you know, dropped out or, you know, finished 39th in Olympic marathon, stuff like that. So, which is a shame. I do think it's probably time for them both, and it was a fitting way and cool way to do it in Paris. So there you have it, man. I mean, do you want to talk about the winner of the competition if you've made it this far?
Mate, we got the women's 10K from last night as well, mate.
Oh, fuck.
Because we didn't record yesterday, and that was a hell of a race as well. Obviously, Chebet took the win coming back from that five, but let's talk about Battaglietti because...
Pound for pound, Battaglietti's had the best run in the Olympics.
Hey, absolutely. Her kick as well. I thought she might win the whole thing.
I think she just didn't believe me. Honestly, she didn't think she was going to. And then I think 50 to go, she was like, what? Where am I? Like, and then she went again. But I think she was like so fixated on again a medal. But I think she was surprised how close she was to Chebet at the end. And I think now going forward, world champs, Olympic Games, she's going to be like, yeah, I can contend for gold.
Yeah, and I believe I heard on commentary that is the first time a European-born athlete has won a medal in that women's 10K, which is a hell of a stat.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was tactical for a long time, and she's still run 30:43, national record.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, Hassan, more hardware for her, and obviously coming back tomorrow morning. So, watch out,
Helena. Christ, yeah, what's Hassan going to do? That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I mean, surely not. Surely she can't live with these women. And the men's race was, I wonder if the women's race will be slower, though, and it will dawdle for a lot longer. Because then everyone gets to the hills a little bit fresher. Whereas the men's race, like, they really, it didn't look that slow. I can't quite remember what the halfway split was, but I don't think it was ever like that slow in the men's race, to be honest with you. And then, but what they did do is when they got to the hill, they just took off, didn't they? I think the men's race was like maybe 15, 10, 15, 15, around that sort of tempo, wasn't it, for a lot of it, which I guess is 305s, but it's not horrendous. I think it's still like 2.9 pace, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just having a look now. I think they went through 5K and 15:40, so that's fairly slow.
It was slow, actually. God, they just...
64:51. Wow.
Fucking hell, and they had the climb.
You're wrong.
The climb the second half, mate.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, I know they went like 14:20 on some of the... Mill went 14:20.
Mate, I could just spend hours on here looking at split times.
Yeah, to be honest, mate, it's...
Yeah, so actually, yeah, guys, if you're listening, yeah, and you have made it this far, and you are, so you must be a bit of an athletics geek. If you go World Athletics Olympic results, they've got all the good stuff on there, the good splits and stuff. So, check that out if, like us, you enjoy looking at that. But yeah, mate, that pretty much wraps us up. Obviously, that women's 10K was incredible. I wonder how many of the women's marathoners, right, have watched today. And have not changed their tactics, but have kind of taken something from it that they're then going to take into tomorrow, or whether they just kind of don't even bother watching and just sort of get on with it. I'll be interested. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm just see how the Brits do, hey? Like Kelly Thackeray really leading that team. You know, can she? Don't think she's going to trump and milk her rest, but yeah, what can she do? I think that'll be interesting. So. But I think talking to Brits, it's worth talking about Megan Keith and Ailish in that 10K. I thought it was cool. It was cool to see them together at the end. I thought for Ailish to hang around and congratulate Keith, and Keith just looked like she just 25 laps of just, I won't say she was loving life, but afterwards definitely felt like she was overwhelmed and she was like, oh my God, what an experience. But at the same time, obviously she probably had a little bit of disappointment in her, but yeah, for them to at the finish, like, it was a good day to be British, mate. Like, it was cool to see. And obviously they both struggled a bit, but yeah, to have each other at the end of the race, and definitely for like Megan Keith to finish, like, I'm not quite sure, surely something's wrong with her. Like, surely she has,
you think,
got
so, yeah.
Mate, surely she's got like COVID. Obviously, that's been going on. I don't know, man. But
or just been a little bit injured, missed a little bit of training.
Maybe.
We don't know. I think, yeah, like you said, I think it was great she just finished it off, because I think that is something you would regret, right?
Do they have a mix zone at the Olympic Games, or do they just? By the way, because usually when it's Worlds, I see loads of videos on YouTube and stuff, and that's where you get like loads of good info, because, you know, everyone's putting videos up in the mix zone. But it feels like all the press conferences have been just like medal winners, and then
I think, like, they're just the ones
just like TV. I don't think they have like a mix zone with like general media as such.
It might be to do with the sponsorship, you know, because I think if unless you're like an official Olympic broadcaster, you can't cover the event, basically. Well, you can, but not properly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just haven't seen anything. I need to ask someone, actually. Interesting.
But yeah, obviously, yeah, not Keith's day, but it's got it. Obviously that we've just been talking about the marathons, but the 10K on the track, right? If you're not quite on it, it's the longest day at the office, isn't it?
Oh God.
If you're just not quite up to the pace that these world-class athletes are saying, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely, mate. Very, very tough. Yeah, Chebet, phenomenal. Batigeti, phenomenal. Hassan, phenomenal, to be honest with you. Yeah, Segar's sixth. I mean, Segar's probably learned her lesson as well, not to try and copy Hassan in that triple. And there you go. That's it. I mean, like I said, we'll maybe just we'll throw out the winner of the prediction contest tomorrow, mate, and we'll review the women's marathon, and that crowns off the Olympic shenanigans.
Yeah, it does. It's been fantastic. But yeah, we will be back tomorrow to talk about the women's marathon, and then just give some, I guess, final thoughts on the whole thing. But as you can tell from today, we've loved it, and we're sure you guys have too. But thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you very soon.